Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next couple of hours are going to be the views of our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And we're going to be talking about, well, we're going to talk in part about the change in the way healthcare is delivered here in the United States. Now, Russell and I date back a long ways. When I got out of medical school, we had county hospitals, and nobody in America without medical care, and we never talked about the necessity of killing the elderly because it was just too expensive to keep them alive. It was the responsibility of every community to provide health care for everyone. Certainly, if you were destitute, you got it for nothing. If you could pay part, you paid part. If you could pay the full sum, you could pay the full sum. And a lot of doctors gave their time, went to the hospitals and worked for nothing because the purpose at that time was to help people. Medicine was a profession, not a business. We had to make medicine a business rather than a profession so it would work more efficiently, and look what's happened during the intervening years. Well, Dr. Blaylock's done a lot of work, certainly evaluating what has happened and certainly what the Obama health care bill really is going to do and what is going to happen to your ability to get adequate health care, especially as you get older. And there's a committee in Washington, D.C. that says, well, after a certain age, maybe 70, maybe 80, why, you're not entitled to health care. You're not entitled to maybe open-heart surgery, which would prolong your life 5 or 10 or 15 years, because the committee has decided. Russell, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Stan.
Why don't you sort of pick up the story, because I know you feel as deeply about this as I have, but you've had the time to really evaluate it. Where, what has happened, where are we going, and why?
Well, I think that it's important that people understand that as generations change, the new generation, not having the experience of the old generation, are very susceptible to a lot of these arguments that the collectivists and the socialists put forward. And as you pointed out, in past days, doctors gave away a lot of free medical care. Hospitals took care of everybody. There was a charity hospital system in Louisiana, where I grew up. And all of us spent time in the charity hospital taking care of these patients. So everybody got health care and worked very hard to get the people well. And even in my own private practice, I gave away hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of business as health care, because that was your duty, to take care of people. And we didn't care whether they had money or not. If they were in distress, we took care of them. Well, that's been forgotten. Now we think that everything has to be purchased and paid for, and like you said, it's a huge national business now. So we can't even tolerate giving away medical care. And what a lot of people don't know, even some people who think that they're journalistic experts in this area, I was interviewed by some, and they were surprised when I told them that it was against the law to give away free medical care to a federalized patient.
And the thing is, of course, that now the federal government's paying for so much of the health care dollar, and the trouble is they don't have the money. So what's the solution? Well, since you cannot, certainly, as over 65, you cannot buy a health insurance policy for primary care. In other words, you can't buy a hospital policy. You can go to the hospital you want to, but you can't buy them. And, of course, doctors are in a situation where they have to bill the same thing. You know, in fact, they have to jack up their bills to phenomenal amounts, simply because that's the only way you get anything at all out of Medicare. And then, of course, if you go to that doctor, he has to charge you the same exorbitant price the doctor is forced to charge because of health care and government regulations, and he'd go to prison if he differentiated. You go right ahead with the story.
Yeah, and I thought this was one of the things that really shocked me, is that suddenly I was not allowed to give away health care or to give patients deductions on their bills. That was considered a crime now, because these were federalized patients and the government was treating them as government issues, almost like GIs. We own these people, and you treat them, you're responsible in answer to us. You can no longer give away free health care. You can no longer give insurance-only special compensation for these people, which ended up meaning that everybody was going to get paid for whether they wanted to or not, but it was the taxpayer that was going to pay the bill, and since the bill was far exceeded any tax revenues, then you have to fund it with deficit spending, so you're producing this massive trillion-dollar deficit we have now in Medicare and Medicaid, which has no hope of ever being paid, and now we're going to expand it even larger to cover everybody in the United States, whether they want it or not. And what, you know, one of the observers, social observers, a long time ago said that the essence of socialism is compulsion. No one asks you whether you want it. No one asks you whether you like your health care that you have or whether you want to have insurance. You're going to do it this way, and you're going to buy this policy that we design and approve of, or you can't have anything.
But, of course, what it is designed to do is to ration the access to health care and to prevent doctors from doing what's best for their patients according to what they believe they're going to have to give exactly the type of care that is determined by a committee in Washington, D.C., of people who've never seen that patient. And when doctors veer from these criteria that are laid out by the bureaucrats, why they would be subject to fine or imprisonment. What sort of madness is that, and where is the outcry? Well, there are a lot of people who don't like the system, but it doesn't matter whether the people want it or not. The elite want to impose this on the people so they can control them, and one of the big problems we have is that too many old people, well, that won't be a problem. They're ready as a death panel. They were not in the Obamacare bill. That's absolutely true. They were in the stimulus bill. But nobody will tell the American people. You go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, many of the things that I listened to when I was watching television debates on this was that, oh, well, there's no death panels in this. There's no funding of abortion in this. All of these things that they're assuring you are not there is a lie. But it's a very clever lie.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, Dr. Blaylock was just saying that, you know, you've heard all these things, you know, why there's no death panels in this bill? There's no funding for abortion in these bills. And, you know, we've got some of the most clever liars in the world. And they can basically say that with a straight face. And the people will believe them. After all, the president wouldn't go on in national television and lie to the people, would he? Well, of course he would. I mean, George Bush lied. Why shouldn't Obama lie? And Bill Clinton lied. You remember when he was asked about having intimate relations with Monica Lewinsky? And he said, well, it's really what the meaning of the word is. Go right ahead.
Well, exactly. And what they do in this bill, that's really a clever bit of prestidigitation, is they say, well, there's no death panel in the bill. So a reporter reads the sections of the bill, and they say, well, I don't see it in there. But what you see in this bill, and essentially what this bill is, it's a blank check for the government, because there's very little spelled out in the bill in great detail except the destruction of the insurance company. The private insurance companies, for the most part, are going to be removed, and only a few are going to be allowed to exist. But the deception is that these concepts of, well, about funding abortion and death panels and take over medical education, they're very carefully couched because of the blank check idea. It says this will be decided later by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And then you go to another section and it talks about, well, the elderly will be moved into having counseling about death and end of life. And if they have a serious illness, then they will be encouraged to go to these conferences, and then the government will approve who will be doing the counseling to the elderly concerning their death. And, of course, if we look at some of these organizations that will ultimately be approved, they're organizations that are promoting euthanasia. They're promoting withdrawing health care from the elderly to let them die. And they do it openly. For instance, the Hastings Institute, which Ezekiel Emanuel, who's Rahm Emanuel's brother and one of the architects of this, openly talks about. He's written a number of papers for that organization, position papers, which openly talks about we need to have come to a reality. We have to stop providing health care to these elderly and to these chronically ill. It's just a waste of resources.
In fact, one of the things he said is that, you know, we should not certainly adhere to the Hippocratic Oath. After all, people should have doctors should have an obligation to society, not to their patients. People should have an obligation to society, not to their patients. What means that means, well, society doesn't have enough money, so the patient is going to have to be sacrificed. They want to undo, 4,000 years, 3,000 years of medical tradition and do away with the Hippocratic Oath. These people openly talk about it. But where are the editorials in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the Washington Post pointing what's really going on? Go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. The reporters, unfortunately, even reporters that are basically opposed to the bill, and as I said, I was interviewed by a reporter that really is interested in this bill objectively, but what I find is that their background knowledge of collectivism, socialism, and of other socialist healthcare systems is anemic at best. And that's being very generous. I started to tell him some of the things that were going on. For instance, I was talking about how physicians are being arrested over bureaucratic discrepancies in the law, errors in coding, which no one can seem to interpret, and that they're going to jail and their offices are being raided by police with guns drawn. And she said, oh, is that in the bill? And I said, no, that's been happening for the last 10 years. She wasn't even aware that physicians were being arrested. Physicians were losing huge amounts of money, $300,000 and $400,000, that they had to pay back to the federal government because the government came back and said, well, we disagree with how you coded those procedures. Well, you can ask attorneys. There's a number of attorneys who said, no one knows how to code these things. It's totally arbitrary, and the government can come back at any time and disagree with your coding and send you a bill for all the past charges, which can amount to several hundred thousand dollars. And they can confiscate all the records out of your office so you can no longer practice medicine. And all of this is magnified in this bill. Whatever we've experienced over the last decade with Medicare and Medicaid and the abuse to physicians, the humiliation of physicians, the fines, and even the prison terms are just a hint of what's to come. If you look in this bill, some of the most upsetting and frightening things is the provisions about punishment. They call things like enhanced reporting and self-incrimination is going to be part of it because the doctor now is told you are responsible for knowing whether that anyone you deal with, in other words, if you are buying supplies from a medical supply business or you're sending somebody to a rehab business, the law says the physician is responsible to know whether those people are engaged in fraudulent behavior and that he will pay or she will pay the price for their fraudulent behavior, as if I have time to go investigate every company and referral that I make. No one has that kind of time. All of it has to be documented ad infinitum. And as I tell people, physicians will have no time to treat patients because they're going to have to collect reams and massive amounts of documentation meticulously on everything that they do, which is impossible. As I looked through the bill, I said, it's impossible to document these things. It's not enough hours in the day. You would never take a vacation. Every weekend would be taken up with it, every spare moment. The documentation is just unbelievable. And as practicing physicians already know, the documentation for Medicare and Medicaid right now is massive. We're talking about things that's just mind-boggling. They also talk about enhanced power of law enforcement, that all the penalties in the new bill will be far greater than they were previously in what we're seeing now. It says, and I quote this from the bill, it said, with respect to violations of this section, a person need not have actual knowledge of this section or specific intent to commit a violation of this section, which is a violation of the law, basically saying intent. You know, most of the law about these violations is based on intent. You intended to defraud. You intended to do things. This says you don't even need any indication of intent, just that you violated a bureaucratic rule, even if you didn't know it was a rule. Now, what the public doesn't realize is in this bill and already existing are just thousands, tens of thousands of rules buried in hundreds of thousands of documents, which no physician, no group of physicians or lawyers would have time to ferret out and find out whether or not you're in violation of a statute of law. This bill compounds that enormously, so every physician will be in violation of something. And so it's just a matter of time or if the government chooses to prosecute them.
And the thing is, of course, that really what you're going to do is simply drive people out of medicine. You can't practice medicine if you have to worry about all of these things and their rules and regulations that they can change at any time, and you have no idea what they've done. But what you're going to do is put doctors into a position where they're just going to be afraid to do anything at all. They're simply going to be an extension of the federal government. Central planning didn't work in the Soviet Union. It's certainly not going to work here. But this is worse than anything they ever had in the Soviet Union. And I think they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to understand until it's too late.
Well, and also the interesting thing about this bill is you look at the whole bill. What you see is this is a rapid application of socialism to all of the United States, just almost overnight. It's going to affect every area of American life, because we're talking about in here that one of the sections says that it is important that the government know what's going on in the home in terms of child health care so that they will go into the home, collect data about everything to do with that family life. Well, that means that inspectors will come into your home and say, well, we want to know, do you own a Bible? Do you have literature that in any way says that Christ was resurrected? Because we feel as government officials that's harmful to the child's psyche. Do you have any books that criticize the government in your house? On and on and on, probing to see if you're in violation of some wish that they want, that you're not going to resist the government and resist these intrusions into your privacy. In other words, they own your child. You don't own. If you're in violation sufficiently, they could take your child away.
And I'm sure that very, very few, if any, of our elected legislators ever read the final bill, because they had one bill, and then the day or two before they were going to vote on it, they changed the bill entirely. Remember, President Obama, we want transparency, we want people to know what's in the bills. Nobody knew it was in the legislation. Harry Reid brought it in 3 days before they were to vote on it, would not allow any debate. And, of course, we got legislation. There's not one person in the 100 back there who knows what's in it. Well, Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, one of the interesting quotes from Nancy Pelosi when the bill was being presented in this short order for passage, she says, "But we have to pass the bill so we can find out what's in it, away from the fog of controversy." Now, who ever heard of, well, the way we find out about bills is we pass them and see what happens. We never read them, we never analyze them, we never discuss them, we never debate them. We just pass the bill sight unseen, and then we'll find out what it's all about. That's exactly what she said, which is the most incredible statement you can imagine. I can't imagine that you're a Speaker of the House and your mental function is so poor, but that's what we're down to in this last moment of the creation of socialist America. But this bill is going to usher in socialism very rapidly. The reporter that interviewed me asked me, he said, "Well, what do you see as the rapidity of which this is going to occur?" And I said, "Well, if you look at all social programs that have occurred in the world, they always begin with this very sad story of why we need it. Then we usher it in, and they give everybody everything almost without limitation. This is how Medicare and Medicaid began, as you remember, is that, well, there were no controls, very little controls. Doctors were just ordering everything, and their bills were being paid. And so it drew them into the system. Once the patient is addicted to the system, and the doctor's addicted to the payment that he's getting, which is easier, then the reality starts coming. Well, okay, now we're in financial trouble, so we're going to have to implement some punishments and some rules and some fines. Then pretty soon, in the stage that we're in with Medicare and Medicaid, well, the doctor is the enemy. The doctor is defrauding the government. The doctor is harming the patient, and the patient belongs to the government. Therefore, we're going to do things to restrict the ability of the doctor to take care of the patient." Well, this bill goes even further. It makes the doctor a criminal before any doctor-patient relationship is established. And it says, well, you know, if you're in violation of this, there's a $50,000 fine for this violation, for each instance of the violation. And that we don't even have to prove you intended to do it, and we will decide how many instances of violation, $50,000 apiece, will be levied against the doctor. Well, one exercise of this within the first 3 or 4 years after this bill comes into reality, the physician is going to suddenly wake up, and he's going to realize, I can't survive in this. It's, you know, when I used to read the stories of the Soviet Union and how everyone was terrified of the knock on the door. Every worker was horrified that he would accidentally say the wrong thing and end up in the gulag. They were scared of their own neighbors. They were terrified of their family because the families could turn them in and they would be executed or hauled off to the gulag. Well, this bill sets up a
hold similar... Up, hold that thought. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Russell was just talking about Nancy Pelosi, and then when asked about the bill, she said, we're going to have to pass this bill, and then we can determine what's in it. We're going to have to pass the bill, and then we can determine what's in it. You would think that they want to know what's in it before they pass the bill, but they didn't. They weren't allowed to know. This was put together by people who want a fascist America, and this is really what it's all about. And, of course, Russell was talking about how they sold us on Medicare and Medicaid. And it was the most wonderful system. I started about 1965, and they promised, we will pay your usual and customary fee, or we will not quit. quibbled about the fees. We'll pay the hospital. We'll pay the drug fees. We'll pay anything. And that lasted. It was wonderful for a couple of years. And then, well, we're going to have to, instead of paying the hospital the full fee, we'll pay them cost plus 1% and then cost minus 1%, and then eventually DRGs, where you know, whether you're in the hospital one day or 100 days, they pay the same thing. And they begin to cut the doctors back more and more and more, and to the point where a lot of doctors really would be far better off being a plumber or certainly have something else. So certainly at least have a government job, at least you'd have a retirement. But what they are doing is terrifying the doctors to the point where they will be afraid to take care of their patients. People will live in constant fear, and you don't believe this is true. Ladies and gentlemen, they have a system of informants in America today. Go up on the Internet and look up InfraGard, InfraGard. It's an FBI program with tens of thousands of informants all across America. And anytime you're a member of InfraGard, you get special consideration from the government, special bulletins all the time about what's going on, and you can report anyone you want to without any fear that anyone will ever know. InfraGard. How could they set up a system like that in America? Well, everybody would know. There'd be an outcry. 60 Minutes would tell us, or would they? Go up on the Internet, find out if it's true. Are we headed the same way that they were in the gulags? Go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we saw in the Soviet Union. And over the years of reading about the Soviet system, as I began to see these systems start taking place in the United States, I became more and more concerned because, you know, in the Medicare system, for instance, they set up a system where they would pay patients to turn in their physicians if they thought the physician either had performed some procedure they thought was unnecessary or overcharged them or for any reason. So if the patient was angry at the doctor for some reason, maybe I wouldn't sign a form to give them disability, then they could turn me in to the reporting agency, and suddenly I'd get a visit from a federal agency. Well, some of these visits turned into an attack by armed policemen. I mean, there are reports of physicians also being invaded by SWAT teams with weapons drawn, terrifying the patients and the office staff, holding the physician at gunpoint as if they were raiding a dangerous drug gang. I mean, it's the physician in the middle of his practice, all over some bureaucratic coding problem. And then they would confiscate his records, including his private patients' records, hold them for months. Well, he can't practice medicine without records. So what is he supposed to do for an income? And then this would go on for months or years, and if they found him innocent, then he was just out the money. And a lot of the patients left because they were scared that he was guilty of something. If he was found guilty, then they could rob his bank account for $300,000 or $400,000 and put him in bankruptcy.
Well, not only that, they could put him in prison. I mean, the doctors went to prison. And ladies and gentlemen, this is going on, and you're not hearing about it. You know, but if you belong to the AAPS, as I do, you hear about this sort of thing. But it's totally suppressed by the media, and more doctors are getting more and more defensive. More and more are going to be leaving as soon as this comes in. Remember, this really doesn't kick in until about 2014. They're going to bring it in very slowly, so you won't realize it. It's sort of like boiling the proverbial frog. Only, ladies and gentlemen, you are the frog.
Yeah, I remember back years ago when I was practicing in High Point, this sort of thing happened where they were publishing doctors' names on the front page of the paper that they had defrauded the Medicare system. Well, I knew these physicians personally, and they never did any such thing. But it ruined their reputation. And this is the kind of thing you would see in a Soviet Turkish government.
Well, this is exactly what they did. The fellow on WikiLeaks recently, they didn't like what he was publishing about the war in Afghanistan. So they suddenly accused him of rape over in Sweden. And immediately after that, Elliot Spitzer, who would try to expose the fact that the Bush administration knew the economy was going to collapse, the housing market, and what did they do? Why, they investigated him. They revealed he was having an affair with an expensive prostitute. If you don't like the message, you destroy it, the messenger.
Yeah, a couple of other things that of real concern this bill, and of which they denied vehemently on their interviews. One was that there's a marriage penalty in the law. An example of that is children up to age 26 are included in their parents' coverage unless they're married. If they're married, they're not. We find a lot of instances in which there's these exclusions if you're not married, but if you're married, then you're penalized for having a normal family relationship. One of the things that really concerned me, and I found basically that almost everybody I was interviewed by, everyone I discussed this with, had no idea this was in the bill, and that is the total takeover of all medical education. That includes, as you read the bill, appointing professors who will teach medicine the way the government wants it taught, including residency programs. They will design residency programs for the different specialties. And they will, by using the power of the dollar, decide what specialty you'll go in, if you'll go into a specialty, or just be a family practitioner. And there's provisions in it, that this is really frightening, that says students who enter into the medical profession and medical schools under federal sponsorship will sign a contract that 10 years afterwards they have to be within a medical corps. Which they say is exactly like the U.S. Army Reserves, which means, and it says this specifically, that you will be sent to areas that are underserved, not only in the United States, but the entire world. So that a student that's going through and he's obligated for 10 years, and now he's finished with his education, they can require him to go, for instance, to Pakistan.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and one of the things that Russell was pointing out was in the bill there is a stipulation that Sydney students, when they complete their education, can be sent anywhere in the world the government wants them to. Now, is that if they take money from the government, or is that simply a stipulation if you graduate from medical school?
Well, it's going to start out if you're getting federal sponsorship. That means if you get a partial loan, any money from the federal government, what's going to happen is private loans are already drying up for medical education. They no longer want to provide those loans for medical students. So that's going to leave the government to fill in the vacuum. So the vast majority and eventually all medical students will get their loans from the federal government, which means they will be obligated for 10 years to the federal government and can be sent anywhere in the world that they want to send them. This should horrify people that you can't even settle in your own community or a community of your choice without fear that during that time you could suddenly be activated and sent to some horrible place in the world. It's very dangerous. I mean, and they asked Obama that. He said, oh yes, these are going to be, some of them will be dangerous places. So people who are in medical school or wanting to go to medical school, they need to start paying attention to what this whole practice is going to be like. But this is a complete takeover of medical education. Now, as you remember, Rockefeller, under the GED, that was one of his ideas as well, was to control education and the scientific institutions. And one of them was the California Institute of Technology. He appointed the professors. He set curriculum. He said it was very hands-on. And then he went to the Eastern Seaboard for the major universities, Ivy League universities, Harvard, Yale, Johns Hopkins, and did the same thing. Set up the professorships, decided who would be the head of the medical school, and decided the curriculum that would be taught, so that the medical students, as they're coming through, they'll no longer know the things that Stan and I know about medical practice. It's going to be propaganda. It's going to be about abortions. It's going to be about forced vaccination. It's going to be about social engineering. That's what's going to be in the design. And if you read their documents from the tax-free foundations that are supplying these inputs to these bills, that's what they say. Our design is social engineering, the new man concept. That is to redesign society and the members of society so they think the way that the collectivist elitists want them to think. It's all Gnostic. When we start looking at the history of all this, socialism, all the isms, communism, fascism, Nazism, they're all based on the Gnostic idea that there's an elite group of people who should make all the decisions, should design society, decide what all of us at the lower level should be doing. And Rockefeller, as you read his story, and people who read deeply into his works and knew him personally, this is how he felt about society, that there were a group of elite whose job it was to design not only the United States, but the world itself. And that's what this globalism, internationalism, is all about.
In fact, he told David Rockefeller told Congressman Dannemeyer some men are born to rule, most men are born to be ruled. Just a passing comment he made, and Bill Dannemeyer told me that some men are born to rule, most men are born to be ruled. These people feel that they are the ruling elite, ladies and gentlemen, and you are simply to be utilized. Your sons are to be set off to fight and no-win wars. We will certainly make people infertile with the vaccines. We will do whatever we want to because we are the people. We are the aristocrats who have the right to rule. You don't in this society, but that's why they hate our Constitution, why they've eroded it piece by piece, as we move from freedom to fascism to the rule by this self-appointed elite.
Exactly. Very well put. This is a Gnostic idea that began with the beginning of recorded history. And there's some great historians who have followed this Gnostic idea and show its direct lineage to today. If you look at the Illuminati documents, the books written from the examination of those documents, it's the same thing. The people in the center are the rulers. They make all the decisions. They know what's best for society. Everybody else's job is to do what they're told. If you read this health care bill, you see the same thing. Well, it's social engineering. We know how a family should be constructed. We know what's best for a community because they talk about redesigning whole communities. Most of the health care for the young people will not be through your local physician and hospital, but it's going to be through school-based health care centers in which it says both acute and chronic health care and psychological health care will be given to your child, not always with your permission or knowledge. So it's, you know, it's an idea that the government now has become the parent of your children. And since the government elitists know best how to make society operate and design society, the child's mind must be taken away from the family structure and developed in their image. And that's what this bill does, and that's what these people in their writings openly talk about. You know, there's no confusion about their viewpoint on who should rule and who should make decisions. This social engineering idea, to me, is one of the most frightening in modern times, because if you follow it to its logical conclusion, and several people have written about this, one is Aldous Huxley, Brave New World Revisited, in which he talked about the ultimate goal and the ultimate capability of science is to remove the last vestige of your individuality, and that is your ability to think independently. Well, there's ways through neuroscience, and I've spent a lot of time studying neuroscience, there's ways to make you think thoughts that aren't your own.
Well, this is what they're doing with television, as you know. They're doing this with television, with movies, with so many of the books, you know, with our programs like Jay Leno. They're molding the minds of the people, and they laugh. They don't understand that all of this is designed to control what you think, what you believe, who you are.
Yeah, and F.A. Hayek wrote about this as well. He talked about how people adopt ways of thinking and viewpoints that they assume are their own, but they're not. They were fed to them. And I tell my wife a lot of times, I say, when I listen to people talk from the other side, what I hear is them repeating verbatim the very words that they heard on the news media or that they read in a magazine. None of them are their original thoughts. None have to do with a careful analysis on their part. They're repeating what they were told. So this subliminal injection of these thoughts in their mind, they think, I thought of that. But in fact, they were fed that. Well, that's the whole basis of propaganda. That's how propaganda works, is that you think you thought of it, but really I put it in your mind. I made you think that way without you knowing it. Well, you look at modern education, this NEA-based, government-led education we have in this country. The children are spending most of their time being brainwashed. They're being told that the idea of national sovereignty is wrong, that we're one world. They're telling them that, well, the most just thing would be to have a world judicial system, a world court, that the United Nations is the peacemaker, that states gave up their rights when they ratified the Constitution. All of these things are being implanted in the mind of these children, and so they grow up and think that's the truth. So when they talk to an older person and they say, well, that's not true, they say, well, that's what my teacher said, and my teacher knows what she's talking about. Well, it's a principle of brain function that if you don't teach that child by age 4 or 5 basic concepts of what you want them to know, you're going to lose them by the time they're 7, 8, 9 years old. Whoever has gotten to them before you will own their thinking, and they won't even know it. They'll think that they've gotten a good education, that they're well-founded, that they understand history and philosophy, and they're going to be upset and shocked when you tell them that a lot of what they learn is just not true.
Well, you know, it's really very difficult to accept the fact that what you learn in college is not true. What we learned so much about, even what we learned about medicine, is not true. And, I mean, after all, you graduate, you've got a doctorate degree, you really think you're pretty smart. And when you begin, things come along and begin to challenge that. I mean, one of the things I believed in totally was evolution. I knew all about the Carboniferous era and the Cambrian era and all of these eras, you know, billions and billions and billions of years ago, and science had proven all of these things, and it was all a lie. But it's so hard to deprogram your mind. This is it's so hard for young people today to understand, you know, what is really going on, and that they've been lied to by their teachers. Most of them do not understand America, our Constitution. They don't even understand what liberty or freedom are about. They don't understand that there really are secret and covert organizations out there that are intent upon molding their mind and shaping their ideas and their tastes. And yet this goes on every single day. And of course, one reason I do what I do, and I know one reason why you do what you do, is at least we have an opportunity to reach people all across the country with information they're never going to get from the controlled media. Because the first thing that these wicked people did was to take over control of the media and the journalistic schools. And then, of course, we have people in the media who've never had a serious thought. We've got some good people there. But if they try to print the truth, why, they'll lose their job, or at least there are articles simply will be spiked and never published. So they carefully control what the American people believe.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, people like you and I and others that pay attention to these things and have spent decades reading thousands of documents and books and pamphlets and these people's writings, you know, what's happening now is not that much of a surprise to us as it is to most people. You know, I talk to people that are just shocked. They think it all started with the Obama administration. And I start going through some history and tell them, well, you know, back in the 1800s, almost as soon as the Constitution was ratified, it was under attack. You know, and one of the shocking things for people to learn is our republic was close to collapse almost immediately. By 1830, the country was almost ready to divide. And the interesting thing was, and this is historically provable, was that some of the northern congressmen, in fact, went to one of the southern congressmen and told him, said, I think it was Taylor of South Carolina, and told him that, you know, the North and the South is just never going to be able to work commercially, and we need to separate. And another congressman came into the cloakroom and said, yeah, you know, we really need to separate the Union into North and South, because we'll never work together, because we're manufacturing interests and they're an agricultural interest, and it's divergent. Well, most people don't know that this idea of a separation really started with the northern merchant class. It didn't start in the South. But the real battle between North and South began with the tariff dispute in the 1830s. It had nothing to do with slavery. And the Southerners felt like they were being, the Southern states felt like they were being at a disadvantage for this tariff that benefited the northeastern manufacturers. And so they said, this is unconstitutional. Well, James Madison agreed. Thomas Jefferson agreed. So the person who wrote most of the Constitution agreed that this was unconstitutional, that a tariff could be passed, a tax, essentially, that benefited one section of the country and harmed another. And as John C. Calhoun pointed out, the purpose of a tariff is to collect revenue, and anything outside of that should be null and void. Well, it was the tariff issue that brought forth the idea of nullification, was that if a law is passed that is definitely unconstitutional, a state has the right and the obligation to nullify it and say, we're not going to follow this law. Well, you know, there were many nullification battles in the United States. Well, in modern times, the biggest example of nullification is the sanctuary cities movement. These people just say, well, we don't care what the immigration laws say. We're going to let these immigrants into our cities and ignore the federal government and the immigration laws. So even though they think, and they'll convince the public that our efforts at nullification are wrong and racist, actually they're the ones who first, on a grand scale, use nullification law. Well, many of the founding fathers, Jefferson and Madison, strongly believed, and President Tyler believed in nullification. So that's the state's only defense against this. Well, in this modern time, here we are again at this same battle that went on from 1830 to 1865 in our country. Now we're facing this idea of nullification again. And we have three states that have already come forward and said they're going to nullify this health care bill.
Well, I think that we have to, and we have to understand that this was not done with the consent of the people. The vast majority of people were against it, and they simply bribed and twisted arms. And they spent, you know, they'll do whatever they have to. They've got city dossiers, and all the congressmen threatened to out them because they're homosexual or because of their extra marital sexual affairs. These people are ruthless in what they're doing. Well, certainly our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment about this, are you concerned that they have simply stripped America of the last vestige of our Constitution with this bill? Totally unconstitutional. Our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, will be back in a moment. Russell, we've got 3 minutes more in this segment of the program. Go right ahead.
Well, as I was saying, I think nullification is probably our last defense. After that, we have nothing else to save this republic. And this is the same position that they were in 1830 and 1860s. It was the only way that the states were going to preserve themselves was through nullification of these illegal, unconstitutional laws and efforts by the people who think that this should be a national dictatorship. And in fact, these people even now say, well, the states gave up their rights when they ratified the Constitution. Well, people don't realize that battle has been fought since the Constitution was ratified. And James Madison very clearly said, no, the states did not give it up. It's a contract. You can read the Constitution, and it speaks of the states. It doesn't speak of a mass of individuals.
And I think it's so vitally important that people don't understand that certainly initially why our senators were elected by the states. Why? Because they were to represent the states, not the people. Because once you had direct election of senators, why then you'd be able to buy and sell the senators, which is exactly what they do now. And certainly John McCain was able to come up with $20 million to buy his seat there in Arizona with the full support, of course, of all the newspapers, which are in on the scam there in Arizona, and most of the radio stations and television. But the 17th Amendment, which was never truly ratified, and the gentleman has actually gone all over the states to every state to find out that neither the 16th or 17th Amendment were ratified, but there have always been those who wanted a dictatorship in America. And they've been willing to work for decades, for literally almost 200 years, to gradually erode the fabric of our society and bring us to where we are today. Whereas Thomas Jefferson said, you know, when the day comes when all power will be centralized in Washington, D.C., then we will have a government as venal as the one from which we were recently separated. And ladies and gentlemen, that's just what's happened today, isn't it, Russell?
Exactly. You know, I wrote an article, I don't know if you've ever seen it, back when it was called the Medical Sentinel. And in this article, it was titled Managed Truth, The Great Danger to Our Republic. And it was the history of how we became close to full socialism. Well, this was written in 1998. and it goes through the history of the Fabian socialist movement, the mass migration of socialists from Europe in 1848 and 1872.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening. I hope you enjoyed our hour with Dr. Blaylock. Hopefully you'll be with us the next hour, and we invite your calls at that time, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. But this is the time when I have to let our listeners know that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience who listen to us, if you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, that there really are sinister supernatural forces at work in the world today. If you agree with that supposition, we hope many of you, if you're in a position to help Radio Liberty, you'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And if you're not in a position to help us, that you'll pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. Certainly, to understand what's going on, you really need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to read the little pamphlets we have called The Occult Hierarchy. There are three of them there, but they go into the background of the founding of this country. And, of course, the occultists have been around for almost 5,000 years, since the days of Nimrod, working for where we are today. Because, you see, America is being used to bring about the world government. That's why we have our troops in 130 to 140 nations. That's why we have 720 military bases throughout the world. Who are we defending against? We're not. We're establishing the empire, which, of course, is to rule the world, and then eventually, of course, be subjugated by this one-world occult government. And that's what people really don't understand, because along with the new world, one-world government, comes the new one-world religion. And that is a very large part of what this is about. Now, we do have an excellent book. If you've never read it, you need to get a copy. They're secondhand. They're out of print. But we have Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies. And you need to get that along with my four-tape set on the secret government. This is a very important book, The Secret Government, and you need to understand there really is a secret government that controls both political parties and makes mockery out of the electoral process, and they control the media, and they control the educational system, and they control the banking system, and they control in large part what the American people think. Barry Goldwater's book, With No Apologies, available from Radio Liberty. Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. We even have the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, Suppressed for 50 Years. You can get that with the Tragedy and Hope special. You can get our Secret Government special, which includes three, four tape sets, or some of these are available on CD. You need to understand that there are people out there working behind the scenes who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And then, of course, we suggest the DVD, the Trilateral Commission by Pat Wood, and you'll find out the power that these people have. President Obama is simply a figurehead. We point to President Obama, but he will do nothing. He is not allowed to do anything. He does what he is told to do. Until you understand that, nothing really makes sense, and you're going to get caught up in this, oh, Obama's a Marxist, Obama's a communist, Obama's and they'll tell him, oh, he's a Muslim. That's one of the big things now, he's a Muslim. And certainly all those things, that may there be an element of truth in them, but the important thing is the figurehead for the Brotherhood of Darkness, and he does what he's told to do. And if he did not, why they would send him on a trip to Dallas? If you doubt that they killed John Kennedy, you need to get our four tape sets. We have two of them. One of them is a two-hour interview with Lyndon Johnson's mistress when she tells you about the meeting the night before when they planned the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. We've got a great DVD on the subject. And, of course, very soon we're going to be carrying the book Double Cross, written by the brother of the head of the mafia, who tells how they did it. And we'll have that book very shortly. You need to get this information. We have a four-tape set on, or four-CD set on how they killed Martin Luther King, about the trial that the King family sponsored. We have a book written by William Pepper, who was hired by the King family. None of these will ever be mentioned by the media. We have a four-tape set, a DVD, and a book on how they killed Bobby Kennedy. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We even have interviews with a survivor of the USS Liberty, when, of course, our government wanted to kill all of those American servicemen. Give us a call, and please pray for Radio Liberty.